Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on an iBook from the Library of Congress that has hundreds of very interesting photographs for a surprisingly low price. We talk with the editor who looked through tens of thousands of photographs to choose just 730.
First and foremost, I wanted just something that you look at it and you immediately think, oh, that's interesting, or something that you look at it for a split second and you look away and then you have to look back at it because you might have, you know, you think, wait, what was that I just saw?
How new technology is letting America's Library of Congress sell a book with 730 photographs for less than $6. That is our story today on As It Is. What if you were asked to choose just 730 photographs from among 1.25 million images, and you had just a few months in which to complete the project? Most people would say it could not be done. Amy Hess is not most people.
When this project originated, I just sort of, you know, raised my hand and said, me.
Amy Hess served as the editor of a book called Great Photographs from the Library of Congress. She is a writer and editor in the publishing division of the Library of Congress here in Washington, D.C. The library is the country's oldest federal cultural institution. It was founded in 1800. During her time at the Library of Congress, Ms. Hess had worked on many projects and books about photography collections. She became known as an expert on such books. But she had never worked on something as big as the iBook project. It was made available to iPad users late last year.
I looked at a lot of photographs. Yeah, in the collection, there's more than 12 million items, and this is just in the prints and photographs division. But because we were working on an ebook, I decided to only look through the photographs that had been digitized, and so we estimate that at about 1.25 million photographs. I wouldn't say I looked at every single one, but I definitely looked at a good 50 to 60,000 photographs.
She needed several months to look at all those pictures. She looked at 20 to 100 small images at one time on a computer screen. After looking at tens of thousands of pictures, Amy Hess saved between 6,000 and 10,000 of them. Now came the hard part, choosing just 730 to put into the iBook. It took her 6 weeks to make those decisions.
Which, let me tell you, was agonizing because I liked them all so much. You know, there's certain photos that you just fall in love with. And, you know, I had to cut so many photos that I just thought were great.
Ms. Hess says she expected criticism of her choices. Questions such as, why did you choose that photograph? Or, why didn't you include this one? But they never came.
you know, you can't please everyone with a book like this, especially when there's just so much material I could have included. But actually, it's been more, the comments have been more positive, just, oh, wow, these images are amazing. A lot of readers, you know, have said they had no idea that the Library of Congress had images like this. And so that's, you know, exactly what we wanted. We wanted people to realize that we have these in our collections and that these images are for everybody. They're for the public. You know, you can use these images. So it's been really positive. Nobody's really complained about or nitpicked. I think people are just happy that we did it.
The work of some of the most famous photographers in U.S. history is included in the iBook. But Ms. Hess says most of the pictures are from people like you and me.
The bulk of the book are these unknown photographers, and their photographic contributions are just as important and just as interesting and compelling as these household names. So I think it's really nice that we're giving them their due.
She says a good photograph makes you want to look at the image again and again. You want to keep it. It pulls you into it. It makes you want to walk into it and join it.
First and foremost, I wanted just something that you look at it and you immediately think, oh, that's interesting, or something that you look at it for a split second and you look away and then you have to look back at it because you might have, you know, you think, wait, what was that I just saw? Or, you know, I was really looking for photographs that moved me, that had action, that were beautiful, but also I tended to look for photographs that represented, you know, historical events.
The iBook was released last November. Ms. Hess says at one time it was the top-selling photography iBook in Apple's online store. It costs just $5.99 on iTunes. More than 100 have been sold. But if more people knew about the book, she says, many more would be sold. The photographs start from earlier times, but include recent images too. There are 8 chapters: The World and Its Cultures, American Indians, African Americans, Images of America, Accidents and Disasters, Architecture, Design and Engineering, War, and Famous People. Because it is an iBook, there are computer addresses or links that permit the reader to go online to learn more about the pictures. Included are pictures of people who have changed the world and events that have changed history. Amy Hess says the technology of e-publishing enables the Library of Congress to make a book that more people can buy and with more images than a printed version would have.
If we had done this book in print, I think it likely would have contained fewer than half as many photos, and it would have been one of those big, bulky, heavy art books, and, you know, I estimate that would probably sell for about $75.
Ms. Hess says she hopes that in the future, the iBook will also be available as an e-book. That way, people who do not use Apple computers or other Apple devices will be able to enjoy it. Of the thousands of pictures she looked at, which one is her favorite?
Well, I'll never pick one favorite, so I'll have to pick a few favorites.
One of them is a picture from Denali National Park in Alaska. She says it is one of the most beautiful pictures she has ever seen. We've put it and 5 more of her favorite photos on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. That's our program for today. I hope it has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz. Please join Jim Tedder tomorrow at this same time for another edition of As It Is, here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. The Internet Governance Forum took place in Istanbul, Turkey. The United Nations provided support to the yearly conference. Delegates expressed concern about the growth of companies selling powerful Internet surveillance software. Some software programs can collect information about individuals around the world. Many of these people are private citizens. The surveillance software industry is worth billions of dollars. Yet some experts say making laws to govern the use of such products is proving difficult. Gregoire Pouget is with the group Reporters Without Borders. He believes there is a need for new laws and other regulations in the industry. He says surveillance software can be used to spy on journalists, bloggers, and other people who use the Internet. Laura Tresca was the Brazilian representative of an organization called Article 19. It fights against unlawful censorship, the banning of reports or other things thought to be offensive. Ms. Tresca said, Latin America is becoming a big market for the surveillance software industry. She said Brazil spent nearly $200 million on surveillance software products in the past 4 years. She notes that Brazilian officials said the technology was supposed to help protect the country during the 2014 World Cup competition. But, in her words, this software was used to monitor activists to avoid protest. Scott Busby is with the Department of State in Washington. He says the laws used to control the weapons industry also control the use of surveillance software.
It's an issue of great concern to us, not only because some of the companies doing this are American companies, but I would point out that the issue is being addressed under the Wassenaar arrangement for the non-proliferation of dangerous items. It formerly dealt with weapons, and now it's looking at surveillance technologies.
But experts and activists say surveillance software is very different from weapons. They say the surveillance software industry will need special laws. Sylvia Grundman is head of media for the Council of Europe Rights Group. She says European businesses are among the leaders in the surveillance software industry. She adds that finding the balance between human rights, the Internet, and trade takes a lot of time. But Gregoire Pouget says countries need stronger surveillance technology laws now. Mr. Pouget says the high cost of the software programs means only a few countries are able to buy it. But he says in only a few years, the cost of surveillance software will lower sharply. When that happens, Mr. Pouget believes large companies and even wealthy individuals will buy the software. Experts worry that increased surveillance of citizens around the world will end a person's sense of privacy. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. I'm John.
Welcome to This is America from VOA Learning English. I'm Catherine Cole.
And I'm Jonathan Evans. One of the world's great natural wonders is in the state of New Mexico, in the American Southwest. Nature has created huge moving hills of pure white sand. These sand dunes cover more than 70,000 hectares of desert. Today on This is America, we explore White Sands National Monument.
It is one of the largest sand dune fields in the United States. The bright white sand dunes are always changing, always moving, like waves on the ocean. Driven by strong winds, the sand moves and covers everything in its path. It is like a huge sea of sand. The sand dunes have created an extreme environment. Plants and animals struggle to survive. A few kinds of plants grow quickly to survive burial by the moving sand dunes. Several kinds of small animals have become white in color in order to hide in the sand. White Sands National Monument protects a large part of this dune field. It also protects the plants and animals that live there. More than 400,000 people visit White Sands National Monument each year. They climb on the dunes and observe the moving sea of sand.
You may wonder how all this sand arrived in the area. To understand that, you would have to travel back in time 250 million years. An inland ocean once covered the area. The minerals calcium and sulfur were at the bottom of the ocean. Over time, the water slowly disappeared. The calcium and sulfur remained. The minerals formed gypsum rock. Then, 70 million years ago, the Earth's surface, or crust, pushed upward. The rocks formed two groups of mountains. Later, the crust pulled apart. The area between the mountains broke and fell down. It formed a half-circle shape of a bowl. This bowl of rock is known as the Tularosa Basin.
About 24,000 years ago, it rained a great deal in the area. The rain filled the Tularosa Basin and formed Lake Otero. The rain and snow that washed down the mountains and into Lake Otero carried gypsum with it. Later, Lake Otero almost completely dried up. Gypsum remained. A strong wind moved into the area. It blew across the land for thousands of years. Pieces of gypsum broke off. The wind wore them away to a size small enough to pick up and carry for short distances. Wherever the wind dropped sand, dunes formed.
The sand dunes at White Sands National Monument are unusual because they are made of gypsum. Gypsum sand is different from common sand. Most sand is made of quartz, a hard silicon crystal. Gypsum sand is made of softer calcium sulfate. It dissolves easily in water, so it is rarely found in the form of sand dunes. Most gypsum would be carried away by rivers to the sea. But the Tularosa Basin is enclosed. No rivers flow out of it. So water with dissolved gypsum has nowhere to go.
Gypsum sand is being made all the time. The dunes continue to form and move under the influence of water and wind. Water continues to wash down from the mountains, carrying dissolved gypsum into the Tularosa Basin. Wind continues to blow across the basin, carrying the gypsum. The gypsum sand grains crash into each other. The crash creates tiny lines or scratches on the surface of the sand. These scratches change the way light shines off the surface. This makes the sand appear white. The sand dunes look like great masses of bright white snow, but they're not cold or wet. The area receives about 25 centimeters of rainfall and snow each year.
There are four kinds of sand dunes at White Sands National Monument. Some of the dunes are small and fast-moving. They are called dome dunes because they are shaped like a half circle. Few, if any, plants grow on them. These dunes move the fastest, up to 12 meters a year. Other dunes are called transverse dunes. They form in long lines across the dune field. They can grow to be 120 meters thick and 18 meters high.
Another kind of dunes are called Barshan dunes. They form in areas with strong winds but a limited supply of sand. These dunes have sand in three parts, like a body in the center and two arms on the sides. The sand in the two arms moves faster than the sand in the center. Parabolic dunes are the opposite of Barshan dunes. They form when plants hold sand in the outer parts of the dune, but the center of the dune continues to move.
You may wonder how anything can live in this extreme environment of a white sand desert. There is not much rain. The heat in summer is intense. The sand lacks nutrients. Yet, almost 400 kinds of animals live in White Sands National Monument. Many of them are birds or insects. There are also 26 kinds of reptiles, including rattlesnakes and lizards. And there are more than 40 kinds of mammals. They include rabbits, foxes, and coyotes. Scientists know that plants and animals often change to be able to live in extreme environments. For example, they change color to protect themselves from enemies. Many of the animals that live in the sand dunes have become white, so it is difficult to see the animals in the sand.
There is another reason why you may not be able to see the animals. Many of them remain underground during the day when it is very hot. They come out at night when it is cooler. You may be able to see their footprints.
Plants do grow in the White Sands dune field, but even plants that grow in most deserts have trouble surviving. A major reason is that the dunes bury any plants in their way as they move across the desert. Yet, a few plants have developed techniques to avoid being buried by moving sand. For example, some plants grow taller, and their roots grow deeper into the sand. The soap tree yucca plant can make its stem grow longer to keep its leaves above the sand. The plant grows up to 30 centimeters a year.
White Sands National Monument is about 24 kilometers southeast of the city of Alamogordo, New Mexico. In the visitor center at the entrance of the park, you can find out about special activities and guided walks. From the visitor center, you can drive about 13 kilometers into the center of the dunes. It is like driving on a lonely white planet. Along the way, there is information that tells about the natural history of the White Sands.
You can also explore the dunes on foot. There are several marked trails. Signs along the trail tell about the plants growing in the sand. You can see some unusual and beautiful plants and flowers growing in the sand dunes. But you may not remove or destroy any plants or animals at White Sands. You can even camp there overnight. But you must be careful. It is easy to get lost in the waves of moving sand, especially during sandstorms. There is no water to drink. The temperature can rise to 38 degrees Celsius in summer. There is no shelter from the sun's rays.
There is another reason to be careful at White Sands National Monument. The White Sands Missile Range completely surrounds the park. It covers almost 1 million hectares. The missile range was first used as a military weapons testing area after World War II. It was used to test rockets that were captured from the German armed forces. The missile range continues to be an important testing area for experimental weapons and space technology. For safety reasons, both the park and the road from it south to Las Cruces, New Mexico, may be closed for an hour or two while tests are taking place.
White Sands National Monument is part of the National Parks Service. The Park Service is responsible for about 400 protected areas across the United States and in U.S. territories. White Sands National Monument is just one of the more unusual examples of America's natural and cultural treasures. Our program was written by Shelley Gollist. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Catherine Cole. We hope you will join us again next week for another This is America from VOA Learning English.